Record. Okay, you're recording.
All right. Well, then I will call the meeting to order. And we'll start with the motion to approve the minutes from our last meeting.
I'll make that motion. Or second, whatever.
Whichever.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any discussion? Not hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, very good. We'll get right into resolutions then. What do we have? Like 10 or 11 of them, I think. So,
yeah, we have 11. And 11. If you want, we have a Mark from Veteran Services here for one resolution. That's resolution 162.
162. All right. So, you want to take it out of order? We'll start with that one. That way we can.
You can
cut him loose if he doesn't want to stick around for our regular business.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. All right, well, we will start with resolution 161. So amending the, 162? Yep. All right, that's the pilot program. All right, resolution 162, amending the county budget to accept money from the New York State Office of Mental Health for the Veteran Peer-to-Peer Pilot Program. And move for discussion.
I'll make the motion.
I'll second it.
All right, let's get this straight. I don't care.
All right, wait.
Gotcha.
Discuss away.
All right. Yeah, discussion. Well, you're on the phone with us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. If you wanna chat with the committee, let us know exactly what it's about, and
okay,
if you would like to do so, yep, the floor is yours.
Will do. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yep.
Yes.
Excellent. So this grant funding that we're going to receive is called the Joseph P. Dwyer Veterans Peer-to-Peer Support Program. It's a New York State program that began about 7 years ago in Suffolk County, and it's grown in New York State. And we were fortunate enough last year to get on the list for the first time to be able to receive this funding. And what it is designed to do, it is it's a proven process of veterans helping other veterans. So we will have qualified social worker type veterans that are going to work for a not-for-profit agency called the Hudson Valley Center for Veterans Reintegration. And their job is going to be to support and identify with those veterans in need, whether it be in crisis at the moment or just to get them involved in other programs. They'll work very closely with my agency and, as a partner agency, and we'll be able to tackle a lot of the veteran problems together. And they'll be better qualified to handle those veterans that are in crisis or mental health issues at that moment. We're the only ones doing it right now, and having them on board is just going to be wonderful and a great thing. And it's proven that it works to have vets help and take care of other vets, but nobody identifies better than with a vet than another veteran that's been in the same situation.
Now, this $185,000 is a one-time grant. Is going to be?
It'll be so we'll receive it twice a year. So every 6 months we'll receive half of that grant, and it's supposed to continue. Once now that we're approved, we should be getting this every year. Now I do know that there are issues every year at the state with this funding, but it normally comes through, and hopefully it continues. And every year we will be seeing this $185,000 come down, and it goes through our Office of Mental Health, and they'll contract directly with this not-for-profit that is, in place, already working with veterans and doing this kind of program. But now they'll be able to be funded and actually grow and become a much better program and partner for us.
That's great. Good. Are there any questions?
I do have one. Through the chair to our deputy executive, should we be expecting another resolution authorizing the outside vendor then, or is this all going to go through the veterans?
No. So this amount, it will, let me see. Sorry, I'm just pulling up the resolution.
Said, Mark said it was an outside agency. Mark with a K, not with a C.
Yeah. It's the Reintegration Center. But I'm not sure if that's included in this resolution or not.
So we can accept it, resolution. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe there will be another one coming down.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
I'll just say, it not related specifically to this, but if anyone here has veterans in their lives and you're not yet on Mark's, on Director Cosopoli's email list, you got to get on his email list because he sends great emails about resources for veterans all the time.
Thank you.
Good to know. Okay. If there are any other questions, comments, then all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Great. There you go. You got it.
All right. Thank you very much. Take care, everybody.
All right. You too. Be well. All right. We will go back up to the top now with resolution 257, amending the county budget to accept an allocation of funds from the New York State Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance to support the homeless through the Code Blue Plan.
Resolution
157.
Make a motion.
And move for discussion.
I'll make that motion.
Got a second?
Abe,
second. All right. Yeah, it's for a little over $352,000 to state money's coming through.
It's a pass through.
Discussion?
Right? It's a pass through.
It is, Al. It's a pass through. Right. Hearing no discussion. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Very good.
Can I just ask before we go on to the next one, is there a way, Mark, to get notified when the warming station opens and closes? I think that's what this is for, right?
It is. It's for the warming center.
Warming center.
Yes. I mean, we do put out information on our website, and we contact like the various police agencies and others. Commissioner Iaposi is on. He can talk some about the communication thread. I'm not sure if there's an email blast that we can put you on, but we'll figure out a way. You know, I don't anticipate that we'll be open any more this year, although we were just open on Friday, Saturday, and into Saturday. But we don't get funded for this unless it's below 32 degrees. And there's no days like that in the forecast coming up. So my guess is we're done for the year, but next year, we can work on ways to notify you when it's open. I'll say this year, there was far more days that we operated than we didn't. I think at least on a 12-hour overnight basis, it operated almost every day. There was a few days where we maybe didn't, and there was a lot of days where we were running 24 hours as well. Mike, I don't know if you have any of those numbers.
Hi, everyone. Nice to see all of you. I don't have a report for the 2021 season yet, Mark, but I do anticipate that we'll have information in the very near future. The service provider that operates the warming center, Catholic Charities, usually puts together a comprehensive report. And I know that you've participated, and we usually convene a meeting around June or July to basically review the prior season's data, see where we're at in terms of the services that we're providing to ensure that we're meeting, you know, ongoing and emerging needs. So we can certainly provide information to the committee along those lines. And then with regard to Abe's specific question, there is a very comprehensive communications system set up, Abe, whereby the director of emergency operations, the county executive, or myself all have authority to activate the warming center, as Mark referenced, when the temperature is 32 degrees or colder. And when that happens, there is a listserv that includes all of the county law enforcement agencies, fire departments, municipalities, interfaith organizations, service providers. So I'm very certain that probably many of the service providers in your respective districts do get information that we have an activation, but we can certainly make sure that if there's any other organizations out there that want to be notified when we have an activation, that we can add them to the listserv.
And we can certainly add yourself as, or we could add Vicky as well so that she can put it out to the entire legislature.
And the family of Woodstock also has a direct hotline, don't they? As well to, yeah, to
the oldest continuously operating hotline in the world.
They operate the emergency after hours hotline, so they're notified when we have activations as well. And during activations, when we have persons that cannot be accommodated at the warming center because it's for adults, individuals, family of Woodstock's after hours emergency services provides families with emergency housing because of code blue circumstances.
Okay. All right. Very good. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. Move on to 158. This is amending the county budget. If we get a motion for discussion and second, I have a question for you, Mark.
I'll make the motion for discussion.
I'll second.
Yeah. I'm not sure I've ever seen a resolution like this come through in the past. Mark, if you're able to explain it a little bit, do you have that resolution in front of you? Are you able to bring it up?
I am, but I did ask the commissioner to come speak on some of these resolutions. So
okay,
he's probably more appropriate to speak to this one.
Okay, yeah, okay. Good, yeah, Mike.
Sure, Mark. Okay, Craig. So with respect to this resolution, my recollection is that it is an annual resolution and it's specifically in connection with grant funding we receive from the prior year that we're unable to spend for a variety of reasons. It may be that we were not able to engage a service provider or contract with an individual or professional to provide a service. So the grant funds have been awarded to us and under circumstances where the time frame permits that we continue to retain the grant funds and keep them on account to be able to arrange for the services. That's why we have this resolution. So last year, obviously, because of the pandemic, there were several circumstances where we had applied for during 2019 grant funding, which we were awarded in 2020, but which we were not able to expend because of the impact of the pandemic. Sure. Fortunately, those grants that we were awarded, we have been notified that we are able to continue to keep those on account and we are going to try to expend those. But because they were not in this budget cycle, that's the purpose of this resolution.
Okay.
And it may not have been something that you saw previously because most of the time we spend grant funds in the designated time frames, but this is a little unusual. I've seen it a couple of times over the course of my time here.
Okay. Yeah, no, I figured as much. Actually, Nettie and I had a discussion earlier. We thought it was most likely COVID related, you know, because of, you know, what this past year has been like. So yeah, it makes sense. All right, very good. Are there any other...
Just quickly, so I'm clear. So that's it's no addition to county expenses, right?
No, Peter, it would be no addition.
Okay.
It's all grant funds.
And there's several of these resolutions in front of us tonight. Are they all the same? Is it all the same story, basically?
No, each of the resolution has their own story. This resolution addresses those grant funds that we're basically keeping on account. And I'll be happy to address questions with respect to the other pending resolutions, but they're not related or connected to this okay. one.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. All right. Resolution 159, amending the county budget to accept an allocation of funds from the, is that Red Lake or Red Lish? I never know how to pronounce this. Anybody?
Red Lake.
It's Red Lake.
Red Lake, okay. Horowitz.
Yeah. Horowitz. Okay. Foundation to support tech tools for child welfare, visual classwork. Move for discussion.
I'll move it.
I'll second it. All right. And this is one of a number of resolutions that are in front of us tonight that are pass-throughs, obviously, after the DSS received notification that these monies were available. And this one in particular is for electronic signature software that will assist in creating efficiencies to maximize workers' time supporting children and their families on their caseload. So did we move it? We moved it. We did, okay. Yeah, if Mike, if you wanna discuss this a little bit as well too for the committee.
Sure, just briefly, Red Lake Horowitz is a foundation that supports child welfare agencies in connection with ongoing activities. And in light of the pandemic, and because we have a lot of the work that our caseworkers are conducting remotely, this was a grant that they offered. So we applied for it and we received this award. And as Craig indicated in his remarks, it's basically going to facilitate us getting signatures in connection with paperwork that we have to process for basically children who we have in our care and custody, foster care children that are placed in foster care homes or in congregate care facilities. So it'll allow us to be able to process paperwork electronically. And it'll just, again, be something that facilitates and makes our workflow more efficient. And because Red Lake Horowitz is a foundation that supports the work we do, we're always exploring opportunities to apply for grant funding for specific initiatives like this. And we were fortunate enough to be selected for the award.
Very good.
And we did clear it with IS, so it will be compatible. There's not going to be any obstacles. That's one of the boxes we always want to check off before we get too far along, you know, compatibility and reconciliation, just to make sure that our systems, we're gonna be able to have the software installed and licensing issues and things of that nature. But IS, we've already met with them and with Red Lake Horowitz. So everything is set to go with that.
Okay. Any questions, comments? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. We will move to resolution 160. So amending the county budget to accept an allocation of funds from the New York State Office of Children and Family Services to expand services under the supervision and treatment services of for juveniles program. Move for discussion.
I'll move for discussion.
Second.
Again, this is the DSS, you know, received notification from CFS, the approval of the supervision and treatment services for juveniles program that was submitted by the county DSS. And these are the state funds.
So
just over $132,000.
I got one question where it says to expand the services. supervision? How so?
You're muted, Mike.
Oh. Yep. Yeah. Oh, can't hear you.
Okay. I wish I could repeat myself exactly. I really got off to a good start on that. So the expansion that's okay. The expansion of the program, and you'll see this is connected to another resolution, Resolution 161. Over the course of the last couple of years, I know that you have reviewed resolutions around the Raise the Age program, which was 100% funded, and that is for 16 and 17-year-old juveniles in the criminal justice system to no longer be processed as adults or be incarcerated. So STSJP, which is Supervision and Treatment of Juveniles program, has been an area that they're expanding to be able to connect to Raise the Age. What has essentially happened is that I don't think that we have seen the numbers either in our county or statewide with regard to criminal defendants in the 16 and 17-year-old category. And there's a lot of different reasons for that, potentially around whether or not law enforcement continue to as proactively charge that age group or not. But because of the fact that the funding has been available, they're expanding it into STSJP. So it just gave us an opportunity to receive more funding. And obviously this is the allocation that we have arrived at qualifying for. So that's where the expansion comes in, Al. And it's also addressed a little bit more in resolution number 161. And basically, and we have a really excellent track record on this. Previously, the committee has requested that I provide data around the preventive services that Coordinated Children's Services and STSJP provide, where we're keeping children from having to come into care or custody or go into congregate care facilities. So this money is going to support, you know, those diversion services and our ability to continue to hopefully have enough intervention so that we can avoid having cases with outcomes where there has to be placement of juveniles in detention centers.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. We'll move on to Resolution 161, amending the county budget to accept an allocation of funds from New York State Office of Children and Family Services to expand services under the Raise the Age plan. Discussion?
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
A second. Again, state monies. This is totaling just over $520,000. So questions, discussion? I don't know, Mike, would you be able to give a little background on the Raise the Age plan? I have a basic understanding, but yeah, if you can go into a little bit of detail, I'd be interested. Maybe the committee would be interested as well.
Yeah, while sure. You're here. Yeah, no, absolutely. Right. I'd be happy to try to give a little bit of a summary. You know, obviously the initiative has its origins at the state level and in the governor's office, and it was arrived at with specific focus on removing 16 and 17 year olds from being part of the adult criminal justice system. So it required that all of the counties in the state implement planning around 16 and 17 year olds who were charged criminally across the spectrum of different kinds of charges that could be incurred, to set up plans to be able to react to and make certain, you know, that there is an appropriate response for 16 and 17 year olds. A big part of that is around detention centers where we do have to have 16 or 17 year olds go into detention where it's only among the population of their age group. But besides that, it's about engaging those 16 and 17 year olds in different kind of programming. So we have, as part of our plan, developed using Family House as a respite. So part of the total award of $386,000 that we're getting is allocated to Family House for respite for juveniles in that age group who are not going to go into detention but might need more supportive services so that they can be residentially placed in Family House. We also use the Youth Advocate Program, YAP, to connect youth with YAP advocates so that they can get one-on-one support in an environment where they can build a relationship, have some supervision, some guidance, some encouragement. We have our multi-systemic therapy, which is partially funded by this. And that's where we bring therapists into family units where 16 and 17 year olds have been criminally charged to try to get to what the roots of the problems are. Again, our Coordinated Children's Services has done a lot of work in this area, and our STSJP program has also been very successful in keeping children from having to be placed in detention. So that's kind of an overall look at it. Each county obviously has to arrive at a program and a plan that reflects what sort of volume and kinds of cases that they're seeing. Again, we have a very strong track record on this. I'm very encouraged to say anecdotally, after everything that we've been through from a fiscal perspective, raise the age and expanding STSJP is a real accomplishment with regard to the fact that, you know, the 100% funding has continued to be there. We haven't seen any kind of a reduction in the funding, and notwithstanding that we, you know, have the federal COVID relief package that was just passed, not all of these programs are easily connected to that. So I am encouraged, and I think it's just important to mention, you know, the state's commitment to 100% funding on a lot of these programs has been something that they have followed through on. And it's continued to allow us to keep our programming in place, keep our services in place. And, you know, I'm optimistic about it. I think we're in a really good place. And I think the fact that we have these kinds of programs, particularly with recidivism around some of the youth, you know, it's that first engagement with the criminal justice system at 14, 15, 16, 17, that's going to dictate what happens next. And the programs that we have in place are really vital in ensuring that if you get the right kind of intervention with that first incident, then hopefully you're not going to be revisiting those kinds of issues. And sometimes other issues are arrived at. You know, you start peeling the layers of the onion and you find out there's other things going on, but we have services in place to be able to try to address that. So that's kind of how I think Ulster County has experienced Raise the Age and has been impacted by it. And I think it's been very positive. So, you know, at this point, it's in the past 2 years, they did 16-year-olds in 2019 and 17-year-olds in 2020. So we're beyond the implementation phase, and this is what the DSS's ongoing role is in terms of providing services around Raise the Age.
Great, that was wonderful, thank you.
I really thought Raise the Age was gonna be more of a probation you know, program, but I guess we're finding it's more social services since they are younger and they're minors in need.
It's a partnership, Laura, I would say. We work closely with probation, and they're definitely still a major partner on our Raise the Age team in Ulster County. So they definitely are still very involved.
They receive their own funding, correct, Mike? I mean, they have different programs that they receive on Raise the Age that they receive funding for separate from this.
Yes, they do, Mark. Yep. This is our component of the Raise the Age plan.
Okay. Any other discussion, questions? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we did 162. We'll move to 163. Amending the county budget to accept an increased funding from the New York State Office of Mental Health for supported housing. Move it.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Second. A discussion? Laura?
Yes, and I was going to reach out to Deputy Ryder earlier, so I can wait for the answer. But yeah, I did meet someone who had come out of a regional healthcare facility, and he was kind of walking up and down the sidewalk uptown, and he was in the supportive housing. He also didn't have clothes other than what he was wearing and said all he had left was granola. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, how supportive are the programs? So once we put them back out, and honestly, and I'm not a professional, but you know, my belief is they're not keeping people in inpatient care long enough, you know, to adjust medications and let everything start to take hold. But you know, when you get them into the housing, how aggressive are the follow-ups to make sure that they're getting involved in programs and have access not just to mental health needs, but you know, to personal needs too?
Sure. I mean, I can mostly speak from the mental health standpoint. Supported housing is not transitional housing meant to take somebody from inpatient beds and transition them to a different circumstance. Supportive housing is permanent housing, and it is meant to provide wraparound services. So oftentimes we'll see supported housing units. You know, maybe an apartment complex will have 10% of their units be supportive housing. The housing is cost, the rent, et cetera, is provided. You know, they could be on DSS, they could be on private pay. The supportive housing costs that you see here and that we're adding to the budget are really the wraparound mental health services. So, you know, that could be anything from outpatient, you know, very stringent outpatient services to therapy to anything else. But they are wraparound supportive services from the OMH side. As far as personal care and other things, I mean, that might be a small part of it, but it's really meant on therapy and treatment.
But they're told about, you know, food pantries, and that's the information I was giving them. It's just, you know, if you're already in a bad state, you know, going without food and clothing, I think just kind of adds to, you know, the issues. So
yeah, I mean, again, these are people who can live independently. You're typically not going to see somebody go from needing severe inpatient service beds to being on supportive housing. The idea of supportive housing is that it just provides the services really needed for somebody who might otherwise be institutionalized to live independently. And not everybody can live in that situation, right? So not everybody fits, not everybody matches, you know, the need of supportive housing, but it does help a lot of people in our community.
All right. Do you have a follow-up, Laura? Or not? You good?
No, I'm okay.
Okay. All right. Are there any other questions?
Yep. I got one question. Mark, you said that it helps a lot of people in our community. Is there a number about how many people? And I'm not saying exact number because I know that probably varies a lot, but just a ballpark figure on how many people in the county does it actually affect?
I mean, I'll just say for this specific resolution, it's dealing with 168 supportive housing beds, but there's far more than that. I, I would have to ask our OMH team to provide me the exact number. This okay. specific this specific resolution is for 168 beds.
Okay, that's what I was asking for. Okay, so it's not, we're not talking like 12 beds. That, you know, it's serious.
No, this is just adding funding. It adds $500 a bed for 168 beds, and then it does a couple other small little things. But that's okay. the bulk of this resolution. That's 84,000 of it.
Understood. Thank you.
And the location of these? Of the beds?
These are, I believe, scattered supportive housing, so they could be, they're spread throughout the county.
Throughout the county. Gotcha. Okay. All right. Any other questions? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Resolution 164, amending the county budget to accept an increase of funding for the New York State Office, or from the New York State Office of Mental Health for assertive community treatment in the amount of $4,454. I move for discussion.
I'll move for discussion.
A second. Okay. Discussion.
This is similar to a COLA. I mean, there was an increase statewide. They call it a net deficit increase to this particular model, which covered the majority of this resolution.
Excuse me.
All right. Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Resolution 165, amending the county budget to accept an increased funding from New York State Office of Mental Health for Gateway Community Industries. This is for personalized recovery-oriented services. Motion?
Motion.
Second.
I'll second.
Right. Discussion. Questions, comments? Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. That was a $900 one, I think, too. That wasn't a lot. Resolution 166. Approving the execution of a contract for $125,000 with Anderson Medical, doing business as Emergency One Urgent Care and Diagnostic Center for client drug and alcohol screening. Move it.
I'll move that. Discussion.
I'll second.
Second. Discussion.
Yes. Yeah, Anderson Meta, is this Dr. Anderson in Port Ewan? Is this what we're talking about? Mark?
This is Emergency One, which is in, this is right over off of, it's off Hurley. Of,
Hurley.
It's over by our Public Works. It's not
Lucas. Over Hurley Avenue. On Hurley Avenue.
Yeah.
Right, but Anderson, I just was interested because Anderson Medical, I know of a Dr. Anderson in Port Ewan. He's got a service there. Say he's in charge of that?
That I'm not sure of. I mean, I don't know. Mike, can you speak to that? Are you aware of that?
I'm not aware that that particular physician is specifically involved with this, Al.
Okay.
Basically, the Emergency One and Diagnostic Center that we use for testing. I could find out, but I
was just curious more than anything because I know that he has a medical practice for you, and I saw his name on, or they named Anderson here. I was kind of confused between that. And there's also a place in Rhinebeck called the Anderson School, which deals with developmental situation. I was just wondering if they're all one of the same people.
I know Anderson School for Autism is not related to Emergency One.
Okay.
And I'm not sure. I don't think the one in Esopus is either.
Okay.
I think he's Family Institute. I think that's how that got started, but.
Something, yeah, I just was trying to differentiate between all the Andersons, that's all. Sorry.
All I had a question.
Sure.
So this is a sort of a broader question for this resolution and a following resolution, and it has to do with drug testing now that marijuana is going to be decriminalized. Can you speak to that a little bit, Mike, about how that's going to change things up with the testing and with all the related sort of domino down the line with DSS and things like that?
I'll speak to it, Peter, but I don't want to give you any guarantees about anything, since we're in the early stages of, you know, what the consequences and ramifications are going to be. You know, in preliminary conversations that I've had with our family court judges, and a lot of this testing is done in connection with individuals who are parties to family court proceedings, where we've brought some type of a proceeding and we've arrived at terms and conditions that have to be complied with. And a lot of those are orders that the court generates not to use any kind of drugs or consume alcohol. My expectation is that the legalization of marijuana is not going to change those orders at all, just because of the fact that it's able to be transacted. It's not going to change with regard to that individual's case where the use of alcohol or drugs has been ordered to be discontinued. So my expectation is we'll continue to test for it on a case-by-case basis. I don't think for the parties who are involved in these cases that the court is going to necessarily be any more or less lenient, because if they're having issues around abusing or neglecting their children because of drug or alcohol use or some type of underlying substance abuse problem, if those orders get generated, they're still going to have to be complied with. So I don't think it's going to have a dramatic impact.
And
I do think that's, sorry, go ahead.
As a follow-up, just a quick one. I also saw that there was connections with testing and employment. How do you see those two being related?
From our perspective, around
I saw it somewhere in the scope of service that it was talking about employment related testings. I'd have to go back.
We use them for other employment related testing, but not for DSS. I don't
believe. Correct. I was talking about it's. I think it's a following resolution, so maybe that's something you can speak to, Mark, rather than Mike.
And I do think it's important to note the distinction that these are CPS mainly driven cases that we're using. We're not drug testing our clients who come in seeking temporary services. I mean, I believe I'm speaking truthfully. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mike. But if somebody's coming in and seeking temporary services, we're not using this contract. It's more for CPS and adult services clients.
No, that's exactly right, Mark. This testing service is with regard to cases exclusively where it's court ordered that a party has to comply with a no use order. So generally speaking, we're given some discretion over being able to randomly test. And, you know, for instance, I'll give you an example. If we have visitation scheduled between a biological parent and their child, and, you know, drug use has been an underlying issue, and that individual arrives for the visit and appears to be under the influence, we would probably make the decision to request that that person submit to a test. We also would just randomly test, but we never do it arbitrarily. And it's not a criteria in connection with being eligible for public assistance or economic support programs. And I'll distinguish in the next resolution, Peter, what that other contract is for.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Any other questions? Comments? All right. All in favor?
Yes.
Aye. All right, resolution 167, approving execution of a contract for $100,000 with Industrial Medical Associates for substance abuse assessment, testing, and treatment monitoring for individuals applying for and receiving public assistance. I move for discussion.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Wait a second. Discussion, questions?
Yeah, this the way you it's worded, Chairman, is it, first of all, in other words, see if I understood this correctly, in order, it would be a condition to social services would be to submit to these kind of tests? Mark?
Al, I can respond to you about the context in which this kind of testing gets done. So when we have individuals arrive at DSS who are applying for public assistance and economic support programs, we're required to do a series of screenings. And one of the screenings that we do is a drug and alcohol screening. And if during that screening, the individual reports that one of the issues that they're dealing with happens to be drug or alcohol use, we will make a referral then to IMA to have that person assessed. And it's part of our goal to, if the person ends up arriving at being deemed to be in need of treatment, that then a referral gets made for that person to go into a treatment facility, it can be inpatient or outpatient. So that's part of what we do in terms of contributing to the effort, you know, to address making referrals and having people evaluated. It's a voluntary process, you know, to the degree that a person presents and discloses that they're experiencing issues around drug or alcohol use. And a little bit of the history, this is where CASACs, Certified Alcohol and Substance Abuse Counselors, actually end up doing the assessments and the evaluations. And we had previously had a position here at DSS where we had a staff person who was a CASAC. When that person retired, we subsequently explored some more efficient possibilities in terms of being able to have the ability to meet this requirement to do referrals for drug and alcohol assessments. So that's how we basically arrived at this.
So if I'm getting this clear, we're spending $100,000 to refer people somewhere else.
No, we're going to spend $260 per client who is flagged in the screening to need a drug and alcohol assessment, who might need to go into treatment.
But it's just a referral.
You know, we'll see a certain, well, they're going to be referred to drug and alcohol treatment facilities, and hopefully, you know, if they're no opioid problem, or if it's a methadone problem, or.
I guess what I'm getting at is that, and I'm sorry, because maybe I don't understand this correctly, but this $100,000 is strictly a referral program that whatever their issue may be is going to be mitigated through another agency or another program. This program of $100,000 is just to see that they get there, right?
Can I respond to that, actually, if it's all right? Al, DSS, and I say this with the highest level of respect, Commissioner Iposi, DSS is a referral office.
Exactly.
In many ways, not just for this. I mean, if you want to talk about decades of moving public sector social services out of the public sector and into other areas that they need to be referred out to, we should talk about that. I asked to put on the agenda later that we should have a really serious conversation. I know that you're excited about it on doing more mental health, you know, doing more work on mental health. But there's a lot of other services that fall into this category as well, where it is really just a referral out. Like, I think if you want to dig at that, I'm not saying you shouldn't. I think that's a really worthwhile thing, but I just want to point out that it is a lot that gets referred out.
But, all right, I appreciate it. Thank you, Legislator Ustel. I'm just curious, is like they're doing a job and they're getting paid through other thing, but this is almost like $100,000 bonus is the way I'm looking at it, to refer people to other departments or other programs. And granted, they do a lot more than just these particular people, but it's still referral service.
They're not just doing a referral, Al. They're doing an assessment. They're sitting down with the individual, going over their history, going over what their needs are, going over Well, that has to be done. That has to be done before someone can be able to get into some type of a treatment facility to start to address the issues that they're having. So it's a necessary function that has to be performed.
But
so to the degree that it's not just the bonus, well, they have to be basically evaluated. They have to be sat down with and go through an assessment to determine. I mean, we can't just put people in nursing homes without PRIs, patient review instruments. In adult protective services, we have staff that does PRIs. Hospitals do PRIs. Nurses do PRIs. Physician's office do PRIs. They sit down and do the patient review instrument. Drug and alcohol assessments are the same type of tool. A professional who is experienced and trained in being able to determine what an individual in front of them's needs are have to do. So the drug and alcohol assessment, it's not just a bonus to refer somebody. It's actually a function that's performed that requires a lot of expertise. It's done by CASACs, who are certified alcohol and substance abuse counselors, who are licensed and trained to do that. And with the degree of issues that we have around opioid abuse in our county and across the state, it's just vitally important to try to get anybody who might be experiencing those issues evaluated by a professional and referred to the appropriate type of treatment. So I don't think it's appropriate to characterize it just as a $100,000 bonus to somebody.
Oh, I apologize.
We might only have 100.
There is no patient-client relationship with this doctor or, you know, this contractor without this contract. There is, I mean, to get to the main point that you're making, Al, they wouldn't be doing this because these are people that we're referring to them through this contract, and they wouldn't be providing this assessment if we weren't providing the people to them.
Okay, so these assessments are typically done when people come to us.
They're done because somebody flags that they have an issue, and then the assessment's done to see which kind of facility would make the most sense to give a referral to. Like the commissioner said, we used to have a staff member that did this, which my guess, I mean, I didn't look at last year's budget, but when you look at salary plus fringe benefits, would have been much larger than the 100,000.
Okay, I just want to make sure I understand. Believe me, I'm not knocking, and I apologize, Mr. Adiposki. I didn't mean it as a bonus. I it was a poor choice of words. I apologize for that. What I was referring to, it almost, I didn't want to see a duplication of funding. In other words, you know, we spend millions of dollars through social services to make sure people get to the right facilities and get the services that they're needed. And I'm just questioning whether this is a duplication of that. That's all.
No, and I totally understand, Alan. I think, you know, it's also important to point out, we're always, I think, you know, Abe made the remark a few minutes ago about, you know, part of the Department of Social Services role frequently in connection with engaging clients is evaluating what their needs are, making determinations, doing screenings, and referring them. I mean, right. We don't necessarily have the ability to find permanent housing. We can't find permanent employment, but we make referrals to other agencies who do those things. I think it's also really important to point out here, we're always striving to achieve better efficiencies and get a better return on our investment. One of the reasons why we made the proposal to shift away from continuing to keep a position in our budget to have a CASAC and to go to a service provider, I was noticing that we were having maybe screening between 100 to 150 people in a 6-month period. And at $260 per screening, 100 screenings at $26,000, where our county share is only 49%, that's a $13,000 cost, which is much less than maintaining a position for someone. And we also have a service provider who engages with an array of facilities who provide in and outpatient treatment that can make effective referrals. And around the opioid epidemic, what's so crucial is being able at screening and assessment to make the right referral as quickly as possible when an individual has indicated they might be receptive to starting to receive services. So I really think it's a win-win-win across the board, both in terms of efficiencies, expenditures, and the actual subject matter. And I think, you know, once we get some time under our belt with this, I hope the data will justify that.
And thank you. I appreciate that. But I will point out that your numbers you just put at us is, you say $25,000 versus $100,000?
Well, the contract is for that amount, Al. We won't spend that if we don't have that number of referrals.
Okay. All right. You understand okay, my, so, you know what I mean? It's a lot of money. Right. I just want to make sure it's going to the right place.
No, I mean, you know, there's a contract in that. We won't incur that. We're not just giving them $100,000 right now. We'll be billed for each client okay. we refer to them.
So it's a maximum of 100.
To a maximum. So if we refer 100 people, the expenditure will be 26,000. And then 26. The county share of that is 49%. So our county costs would be 13,000.
Understood. So it's a maximum of 100. Okay. That makes a difference.
Yeah.
The other thing I like about this is it doesn't rely on one individual staff person that you're managing who, if they leave, then you've got some gap in service or you're trying to figure out and put. So this is a firm that's got several people. So you're not relying on one human to take all this on.
And that's a really important point, Peter, because the other thing that can happen when there's a single point of entry that's always transacting this kind of function, it's obvious sometimes that there can be preferences arrived at in terms of which facility to refer to. So I appreciate you pointing that out. I think it's going to make us able to be more responsive on a larger scale in terms of meeting all the potential needs that we arrive at identifying. And again, you know, the KSACs do really important work, and it will be KSACs that are doing all the evaluations. So that's an important component of what we're contracting for.
Thank you, Mike, for your information. Thanks for clearing a lot.
Oh, you're welcome, Al. I appreciate it. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
So I've got a quick question for you, Mike. Considering some of these services that are provided also include federal assistance in some instances. Will the local DSS apply the law according to the feds or the state when it comes to the legalization of marijuana?
I think we're gonna stay in a holding pattern and wait for further guidance about how that might impact some of our programming, Craig. See so many different potential circumstances where obviously someone, you know, might arrive at relying on the fact that it's been legalized to potentially avoid meeting a criteria. Again, I think for now, because of the fact that most of the cases that we deal with that involve drug or alcohol use and restrictions around that are reflected in court orders, I don't think that the legalization is really going to be impactful. But we'll watch closely and keep obviously administration informed about any developments that might change how we have to conduct business or impact what types of services we're able to be involved with.
It's still a little bit early then, right? How it's going to impact. Yeah, it makes sense.
Alcohol is legal, but if a court says you can't touch it, you can't touch it. It's still the same thing. Just another alcohol.
Exactly, Al. That's kind of the way we've been, expecting that it's going to probably unfold, because the entire time we've had a lot of orders that restrict alcohol use, and that's okay. been legal. So,
sure. Okay. Any other questions? Discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, very good. That'll do it with resolutions. Thank you so much, Mike, for joining us. You know, you're always a wealth of information, and
Thank you,
Mike. Yeah, the details that you can provide on these programs, you know, are really second to none. So I appreciate that.
And I appreciate the time that you all take as well. And I do really appreciate the questions, because I know sometimes, you know, some of the work that we're doing and what we're involved in, you know, doesn't always seem to make sense or come across as clearly. So I appreciate, you know, Mark inviting me to join you at this meeting, and I'm always available to answer any questions. So good to see you all.
Thank you. Take care, Mike.
Stay well. All right. New business.
So if it's all right, Craig, I can jump in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Thank you. So I had asked two items, but they're really related. So I'm going to kind of address them together, and then we can either talk about them separately or talk about one. Or I just want to make sure that these are on everybody's radar. So, you know, we reached out. So we've got this issue with Health Alliance and the inpatient mental health beds. I think I've been incredibly proud of our work. I mean, it's not really work. It's more like statements and kind of engagement in this committee with the, you know, leadership from the hospital and in conversation with the county executives team. I mean, we've, you know, and the eagerness among people on this committee to address the fact that we're losing our inpatient mental health beds. We've lost them already, and they're not likely to come back, and that this is an issue that we would like to see resolved. In the last session in 2020, Resolution 225 was something that we, you know, that we passed, and it specifically asked the county executive, in addition to calling on Westchester Medical to return the beds, it also asked the county executive to explore options to expand mental health services and care in Ulster County. And I want to make that resolution, I want it to be in our minds as we continue to grapple with the fact that we're not getting those beds back, and we're very much in need of these services for our residents. And this has become a very, very real thing for me, not in, for my district, not necessarily that the issue I'm about to share is you know, the same folks that would have used these inpatient mental health beds, but it is part of this larger issue of a lack of mental health services in our county, and an opportunity and really a need, just like we asked the county executive to explore options for the inpatient mental health beds. There are other areas that we should seriously consider. And so I'll share with you an issue that's going on in my district. But it really is like so many things that happen in Kingston. It is, you know, the population center, but it really is serving the whole community. So there's a facility in my district that's called Chiz's Heart Street. It's located on Washington Avenue, and it is a four or five adjacent buildings that have operated as a boarding house for people, serving predominantly people with very, very severe mental challenges. And there is capacity for up to 70 people there. The number of people that are there right now is slightly lower than that. And it's a little bit unclear about just exactly how many people are there. But these are folks that really, we were talking about supportive housing earlier. These are folks that really, you know, require significant support and have a range of issues. A lot of them are on SSI or SSD and don't have a direct relationship with the county through DSS for a variety of reasons, mostly because they're receiving, you know, they receive their benefit, their state benefit through SSI or SSD. And the reason I'm bringing this up now is because it was announced earlier, or it has become clear earlier this spring that the facility has been put up for sale. And the future owners, there isn't a buyer in contract yet, but it's fairly clear that the woman that's been running it for a very long time is no longer going to continue running it. And this is a loss in terms of the services that we provide to something like 60 people. I mean, it could be up to 70 people. Right now it's a little bit less than that, but there is no alternative for folks that are in this, that have these mental health needs in this facility right now. The owner is not going to continue operating it. I think she's pretty much done, or rather the manager of the facility isn't going to continue operating it. You know, no matter when it gets sold, she's, you know, moving on. And you know, I wish her well. I spoke with her over the weekend actually. These folks are going to get placed out of the community. She's working really hard to help place folks that are, in places that are going to address their needs. But we don't have this in our community here in Ulster County. And this means Ulster County residents are going to be displaced and you know, God willing, find great services wherever they can find them. It's a really tough moment of reflection for me. And I think it should be for all of us to think about the mental health options that we have in our community. And the fact that this is in my district, I think doesn't make it any less significant for Ulster County as a county and the Hudson Valley because they're, you know, it's not just county residents that are there, but it's folks from all over that might have, you know, even fewer options in districts west and north of us. And so the reason I wanted to bring this up is because I want this to be part of the conversation about mental health funding in our community, a conversation that we've already asked the county executive to explore. And I've spoken to many members of the county executive's team, including Deputy Exec Ryder, Commissioner Iposi, Pat, County Executive Ryan has been involved in the conversations as well. I am just trying to refocus as much energy on this issue as possible. And also to point out that, in the months ahead, we're going to be having conversations about federal rescue plan money, and mental health toll of this pandemic has been significant. And it's been particularly significant for the folks that are served by facilities like Chiz's Heart Street. As a relatively mentally well person, I have had a hard time with the mental effects of the pandemic. I mean, really, I can only imagine how folks that really are challenged on a good day are dealing with this situation. And so, you know, I hope that we're gonna be really strongly considering how we can serve this population. So I appreciate the time to talk about this. I'm happy to talk, you know, have a dialogue about it, but I wanted to make sure to really orient this committee to this issue.
Craig went black.
Yeah, Legislator Bruno, do you wanna? Go ahead.
Craig, keep going out. If I can talk about what I talked to you about earlier this week, and Mark, is that okay at this point, you think?
Yep, sorry, I was muted. No, absolutely, Alan. I think this will be a good opportunity for you to discuss.
Abe, I'd like to address something with you. This is one of the things that have been in my craw. It's driving me nuts, especially when we heard Dr. Doyle say point blank, sorry, you're not worth it. It's we're not bringing them back to Ulster County. And that really ticked me off, to be honest with you. I had a meeting this past week, Wednesday, with Peter Kelly, who is the president of Vassar, the vice president of New Vance Health. New Vance is a hospital conglomerate which holds 7 hospitals from Danbury, Sharon, Connecticut, Vassar Brothers, Northern Dutchess, and Putnam. And I wanted to open up the conversation between Ulster County, Mark Ryder and Pat Ryan and Craig Lopez, of possibly circumventing Westchester Medical and getting a different medical provider to provide the beds. At least get the conversation going. Maybe we can find a location. I mean, first of all, Chiz's Heart Street, I feel it. I know who some of the people in there. They perform an amazing, amazing service to people, not just Kingston, but Ulster County, the people that go there. All that being said, is if we can get the conversation going, we don't necessarily have to be hooked up, in my opinion, and the opinion of other people too, with Health Alliance. They just happen to have the buildings. Ulster County owns buildings and will probably own more buildings. New Vance Health Quest owns buildings in Ulster County as well. And I'll use Macy's as an example where they turned that into a medical practice building. They are going to be doing residence options where they're going to actually provide, they're going to become a teaching hospital consortium, so to speak. That being said, we're working on getting the conversation open and going. We're possibly setting up a partnership with another medical provider to bring those beds back to Ulster County. We may have to pay money for it as a county, but personally, I would rather write that check as Ulster County or whatever checks are needed to get those beds back than write those checks to a facility who really made it very clear that they don't care about Ulster County. So even if it costs us more, I think it's worth it in the long run because we're spending much more money and much, I wouldn't even use the word money, but the toll is much greater through not having them. I mean, the suicide, yesterday I was learned two more people that I know very closely died from an overdose. Mm-hmm. One was an adult in his 50s. Another was another child of 25. Those being said, we need to stop this. The pandemic has increased it. I forgot what the actual percentage is, but it's ridiculous. We need to have our medical health in Ulster County. If it's not the county seat, then it needs to be somewhere nearby. Ellenville Hospital is doing an incredible job with it. But I think if we get all the right players on the same team and we go after other people that can provide these services with us, I think we can get it done. I applaud you, Abe, for bringing this to the forefront as well. But there are a couple of us that are actually trying to circumvent the Westchester Medical and try to get it done. So hopefully, Craig, I don't know if you reached out to Peter.
I did, actually. I reached out to them today. I left a message. And I would expect to get a call back, you know, maybe tomorrow in the next couple of days. If not, then I'll follow up.
Yeah. Peter Kelly, he's a great guy. He was the president of Putnam, which has an incredible mental health facility at Putnam Hospital. He was very open to the idea. And mm-hmm. He did say there was a lot of costs involved. There was a lot of things that were red tape that we aren't familiar with. But you know what? It may be a dead end, but we won't know it until we turn onto that road and go down there. But at least we have to try. As a committee, I think it behooves us to be on the forefront of moving forward and getting those beds back to Ulster County.
Sure, no, definitely. I think it, in order to move forward, yeah, it starts with a dialogue. And I think that's kind of, our job here is to facilitate that dialogue. And if we work together and reach out to the right people, like you have, Al, and, I want to reach out to, and I've been in discussions with Steve Kelly as well. I know that Laura has as well. And I think we're all on the same page that something has to be done. What's going on here in Ulster is indicative of, what's been going on in other places as well. And to watch, Westchester and Dr. Doyle come in and just totally dismiss us, and kind of throw us under the bus for I'd hate to say that it was completely money related, but I think it is. Are all on the same page that it was most likely related to money. And 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 something has to be done. Like, even though it was 40 beds, those 40 beds make a big difference, plus the additional 20 for substance abuse related issues. And we've got to start someplace. And I think like our intent here, Abe and Al and Laura, I think we reach out to the right people, bring them to the table, have an open dialogue, and really try to come up with a way that we can start to solve this problem, because it's not going to get any better anytime soon.
I have a vision where you take, I know obviously Enterprise West is off to another direction, but a building such as that or the Head Trauma Center and make it, we have that in Ulster County. We can have a mental health facility, and run it ourselves if we have.
No, absolutely. And I think Gateway could play a part in this as well. I know that they have, some room at, a facility that they have as well. And I think if we bring the right people to the table, we can really come up with a solution. And
I've started some conversations with Step One. Are y'all familiar with Step One?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Substance abuse. So just started getting those conversations rolling, but I think they'd be an amazing partner in this as well.
Yeah. Sure.
I honestly think if we seem to have other parties that are very interested in helping out Ulster County. And since Health Alliance does not seem to be, and I spoke to, I think she's the office manager, but I was under the impression that the 14 beds we had in Ulster County were in Ulster County in the hospital, but apparently they're at Mid-Hudson Regional, which is the old St. Francis. So, and the turnaround time, I mean, this has really hit home with close friends. They're only holding people with severe substance abuse and mental health issues for 5 or 6 days. And in one case, the young man was making phone calls 15, 20 times calling the house, even though the police gave his father a restraining order. I mean, he hit him so hard, he had a bleeding stroke, a hemorrhaging stroke. So this is not a joke, and how a hospital could determine and release somebody who is, not in danger of hurting themselves or someone else when they're behaving like this and don't have time to get the medication straightened out is beyond me. I would be willing to either meet earlier at one of our meetings or if it's too long, because we do have energy and environment after this one, to meet at a separate time, but and not for any great length of time, but just so we could bring in these different parties that are interested in speaking with us. Step One, Steve Kelly, Peter Kelly, and see if we couldn't put together a program. There's got to be, there is funding coming in, but there's got to be funding for this. And,
I think we create the funding. I think you're absolutely right, Laura.
My time chamber, Melissa Sitt. Where would that be? Right here?
Oops.
There are keys and stuff like that.
I think we could create a team of experts to make this happen. This is not an insurmountable thing in front of us, and I would love to be, a big piece of it if I could somehow. It's very, real and near and dear to my heart. I've lost a lot of people from mental health issues, and I'm using the word mental health issues because that transcends into substance issues, substance abuse, and it all ends up in the same spot 6 feet under, and we got to stop it.
And it's hitting younger population now, between 11 and 15, which I can't even understand, but yeah.
It's hitting everybody. There is no age limit on this anymore. COVID made sure of that. Mark, you got any input?
I mean, these are all things we're working on. I encourage you all to continue down this path, and I think as a team between the legislature and the administration, we'll figure out solutions. But, none of this is going to be cheap, and which is why, what WMC is leaving. I mean, it is a money constraint. They are improving some services that they're going to bring in a high level cardiac, facility that we didn't have and haven't had to date, but in doing that, they are deleting the mental health beds, which to us is not acceptable. So we have to find some kind of solution. I don't know that we're ever going to find somebody to come in and do inpatient mental health beds in Ulster County as a standalone, whether it be 40 or 60 or, it's a very difficult path, but I think that we can patch work a bunch of better mental health services together with various partners and help come up with a solution that all of us agree upon. I just think that we got to continue reaching out to our individual networks.
Sure. I think that's a good plan.
I agree with you, Mark. I had to kind of chuckle about, we're losing mental health, but we're gaining cardiac care. The ultimate reason is the cardiac care generates more money. That's the part of the healthcare business that makes them millions. I mean, a cath lab, you know, makes $500,000 an hour while somebody is on that table.
Can I suggest that we hash this out at a separate meeting? I'm sorry, we're kind of going, but energy and environment is waiting, and we need to I'm sorry, Al, I don't mean to cut you off, but we could talk about this for a long time. I suggest, like Laura said, let's set a separate meeting and focus on this issue.
Understood.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a good idea.
This could take it as an animal unto itself. You're right, Peter.
Well, I appreciate everyone for having the conversation and hearing what I wanted to bring to the table here. Thank you.
All right. Does anybody have anything else for the good of the committee? No? All right. Hearing nothing, we'll move to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second. A second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Very good. Thanks so much, everybody. Take care.
Bye, everyone.
Stay well. All right.